How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Zim's Beer Review. I'm your host, Garrett Zimmer. Thanks for tuning in. However you may be tuning in, whether it is on YouTube live stream or on Twitch, or if you're following the podcast, wherever podcasts are found, thanks for tuning in. Today we have a beer that actually was given to me by my brother-in-law. And it is from the East Coast, which is the specific reason why he got this for me. Because most of the beers I had reviewed were from really close to where I'm from, whether it be a Wyoming beer dipping down into Colorado or even some Oregon beers where I'm originally from, if you couldn't tell. So a buddy of his, I believe, went to the East Coast and picked up a beer for this podcast, and brought it to him, and he gave it to me to review. So we have a beer. I think it's our first beer officially from the East Coast. It's been in my fridge for a couple weeks now. I've had other beers come in that I've wanted to review, and this one just kept getting pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. And I think it's time for us to actually finally do this one. So today, what we are reviewing is a beer I've never heard of from a brewery I have never heard of, but they have a bold claim on their label, which really caught my attention. So without any further ado, the beer we will be reviewing today is Yuengling and Sons Traditional Lager. The beer name is lager. From what I can tell, it's their traditional lager. I'll tell you a little bit more about that as we go. The brewery is Yuengling and Son. I had to look up the pronunciation of that to get it accurate. The name came from the founder of the brewery was German, and he came over to Ellis Island, and his name was something similar to Yuengling, and they ended up changing it to what it is now and changing the spelling and everything. So what it claims on the front of this bottle, you can't read it if you're watching on YouTube, it is far too blurry there. What it claims on their bottle here is America's oldest brewery. I thought, that's kind of a bold claim. Are they just trying to, is this marketing? Is this true? Is it just something that they believe? But then there's other people that also think that maybe they're the oldest. You know what I mean? Like, who invented the Philly cheesesteak? You watch those shows on Food Network, and it's like, no, we invented it. It's like, no, this restaurant down the street invented it. And it's like, nobody knows for sure, but there's like five places claiming they invented it. I figured that might be the case with the Yuengling Lager, or Yuengling and Sons, I should say, claiming they're the oldest brewery in America. I thought, I've never heard of this place. Unlikely they are. They probably were around all around the same time. But after looking into it a little bit, I think they actually have a pretty solid stake as being America's oldest brewery. I was surprised because I had never heard of them before, but I think Yuengling and Sons might be America's oldest brewery. Actually, I'm going to confirm it. They're saying it, and from what I can tell, it's true. So, what we're trying today is called the Traditional Lager Original Amber Beer. That's all it says on here. They're out of Pottsville, Pennsylvania. But that's all I'm getting from this. It's in a green bottle. A lot of times green bottles, from my experience, end up having a very skunky smell and a skunky taste to them. Think like Stella Artois. If you've had that before, pretty common popular beer. It's skunky though. It has a skunky flavor to it and a skunky smell. This is in a green bottle. Don't know. But that's what I'm going to guess just based on the bottle color. Okay. So let's open this up. Let's get our glass here. We actually might have a twist top on this. Let's see. We do. We have a twist top. America's oldest brewery has upgraded their bottle caps since they began. Okay. As we pour this in, this is listed as a traditional lager. It says an amber beer. It definitely has amber color to it. It's lighter than I expected. I expected this lager to be extremely light. I thought this was going to be along the lines of like a Budweiser style. That type. Not Bud Light, but like an actual Budweiser is what I thought. But I'm not thinking that's what we have. This is, it actually smells sweet. It does not smell like a Budweiser or a Coors, we'll say. It has the coloration of an amber. It is far darker than what I expected. And it doesn't smell skunky. So I could be wrong on my first instinct there. After tasting, that's really light. With another, yeah, the second taste, it is a light beer, but this is actually pretty good. I wasn't sure what to expect. They say lager, they say amber. Nowadays, lager and amber are really two different types of beer, so I didn't know what to go with on that. They're saying this is a traditional lager. It's actually really smooth, really light, very little hops, and not a lot of bite to it. Very carbonated, really tight head on it, subsiding pretty quickly, but the coloration on it is, I think I mentioned that the color was darker than I thought, but I don't think I actually said what it was. The color on this is like a really deep gold to a light brown-ish color, not really yellow, nearing on the amber side, probably a little more yellow brown than I would expect for an amber. But it is definitely darker than your average lager. It's actually not skunky at all. I really thought this was going to be a super skunky beer, but that was totally arbitrary. Just pulled that out based on my past experience of beers in green bottles being skunky. Maybe I'm making that up. Maybe there's something to it. I like to think there's something to it. I like to think, here's my thought. I'm gonna lay it out for you. Here's my thought. I think that beers get a lot of their flavor from the color glass that they're in. Color glass bottle that they're in, I should say. Because they're in the bottle. Who knows how long this beer or any beer has been in a bottle from the time it was bottled to when you bought it and open it up. So it spends a decent amount of time in its bottle, going in and out of distribution facilities, in and out of trucks, going through different temperature changes, in and out of the sunlight, whatever it may be. That has to have an effect on the flavor. And I think that's a lot of the reason that most beers today you get in a brown bottle, because I think brown bottles eliminate a lot of the UV light, and the sun can't change the flavor or alter the flavor as much. For example, I have a bottle here. This is I'm not going to show you what it is because this is coming up on an upcoming episode. But this one's in a brown bottle. A lot of beers are in brown bottles. Some are in green, some are in clear. But I think that those ones tend, or I thought until today, that those beers tended to all have a similar base flavor. I thought that the green bottle ended up making the beer a little bit skunky. Trying to think of other ones that this is, other green bottled beers that have that skunky characteristic. I mentioned Stella Artois. I think Heineken is that way, and they're also in green bottles. Even Dos Equis, which is a totally different type of beer, it ends up having a little bit of a skunky flavor to it. Maybe I'm totally making that up and it's in my head, but I think that there's got to be something to it. But this beer's green in a green bottle, and I don't taste or smell that skunkiness on this. But I stand by my gut feeling that the glass bottle color has to change the beer flavor somehow, because beers just taste better on draft. When they're out of a keg, they just taste better. And I like to think that that's because they never were exposed to the different sunlights that a beer in a bottle might have been. I don't know. Maybe that's something I'll try to do. Keg beer and bottled beer taste test. I don't know how I'd do that. Maybe I got to buy a physics machine, if you ever look at those. FIZZICS, physics. Super cool product. Anyways, that's for a different day. Anyways, let's get back to the Yuengling & Sons traditional lager. Went off on a tangent there. So the Yuengling and Sung's traditional lager, pretty good beer, actually. Very easy drinking, super light. I don't know the alcohol content on this. I don't even think it says on the bottle. Nope, it doesn't say anything on the bottle. I don't have anything to go off of on this. I just got one bottle. Usually I buy a six pack of a beer and then end up reviewing that, so I have a little bit more information on the six pack carrier. But in this case, I was just given a single single bottle. So I don't know. So I'm going to tell you a little bit more about the quote unquote America's oldest brewery. So Yuengling and Sons, I had to look up the name. It's not Yuengling. It's Yuengling and Sons. They're out of Pottsville, Pennsylvania. And they've been out of Pottsville, Pennsylvania since their inception. They have the claim of America's oldest brewery. They were established in, 1829. We're coming up on, 189 years? We're getting close to 200 years old here. They actually did not always go under the name Yuengling and Son. They began their brewing journey as Eagle Brewery in Pottsville, Pennsylvania. They stayed with Eagle Brewery from 1829 to 1873. And at that time, the son of the founder came back to work with his father at the brewery. And at that time, they changed the name from Eagle Brewery to Yuengling and Son because, well, it was Yuengling and his son. Makes a lot of sense. So that was in 1873. I had never heard of this brewery before, and they've been around longer than any brewery in the United States. Never heard of them. Never seen their beers before. So I was a little interested to know more about them. Not only are they America's oldest brewery, but they're actually one of America's largest breweries, which is crazy. I thought, okay, maybe they're old, but they just do super small quantity. No, recently, as in like, I think like 5 years ago, maybe a little bit more than 5 years ago, they were tied for the nation's largest brewery, tied for first place. So they're oldest and tied for first in terms of volume, not like how big the brewery was, but how much volume that they were putting out. And they were tied with Boston Beer Company, who, if you don't know, makes Samuel Adams. So they're right on par with how much Sam Adams is selling. So then I thought, okay, they got to be selling everywhere, and I'm just totally oblivious and never saw it. But that's not the case. They have been expanding and expanding their range of distribution. Up until last year, they had states added. So they're not available everywhere. Starting in, I want to say like 2008, 2009, they really started ramping up where they're available. So get this, I'm going to list off a couple states that they were not available in until the last 10 years or less. They recently added distribution to Georgia, West Virginia, Ohio, Rhode Island, Connecticut, Louisiana, Indiana, and Arkansas. And they're continuing. There's more. They're not even available in Texas. So it's the fact that they are the oldest brewery, one of the largest breweries in terms of volume produced, but they're not even available everywhere, and I had never heard of them, really caught me off guard. I guess good for them. They're still expanding. As of last year, they added more states. I think they added Arkansas last December, like 2 months ago. So go figure, I guess. I mean, they're getting bigger. Anyways, let's back up. We jumped way ahead to the present day, back to 1873, getting in the Wayback Machine. So they survived the Prohibition years. So that's one thing that's really cool about these older breweries is you wonder, okay, how did you get through the Prohibition years? Because when Prohibition hit, breweries just closed down left and right. So to have the claim as the nation's oldest brewery, you had to make it through Prohibition. How did you do that? Not a lot of breweries did. They obviously did. They made it through Prohibition by selling and making ice cream, which was okay. That's one way to keep the name and the business. But they also made what are called near beers. Excuse me. So a near beer, it's like a term. If you've never heard near beer, that's N-E-A-R, near beer. A near beer is a beer that has less than 0.5% alcohol by volume. So we're talking like O'Doul's, like alcohol-free beer. Even O'Doul's, they claim that it's no alcohol. Pick up a six-pack of O'Doul's and look on it. It has alcohol in it, but we're talking less than 1% alcohol. So they can sell it as alcohol free. So they got through Prohibition selling ice cream and near beers, which was like beer flavored water. Kind of crazy. And they, after Prohibition, they actually came out with a beer called the Winner Beer because Prohibition and Prohibitionists won the fight. So they called their next beer the near beer. They called it the Winner Beer. And not only did they make it the Winner Beer, they sent an entire case of it to the president. As soon as Prohibition ended, they started making beer again and sent a whole case to the president of the United States. I think it was Roosevelt at the time. So they pretty much just made beer, a couple beers. I want to say like 6 to 8 beers. Let me see if I can pull it up. They don't have a lot of beers. They have 8 beers, excuse me. They have a light lager, traditional lager, a black and tan beer. That actually sounds pretty cool. A porter, a light Chesterfield ale. I don't know much about that. A premium beer, a straight light beer, and then an Oktoberfest beer. But they don't, I mean, it's not a huge range that they have available. And they pretty much did that range of beers, just basic, just a few different styles from 1873 through Prohibition. Things changed a little bit after that. They changed a little bit, all the way up until the 70s. And in the 70s, they started to grow because of the increase in interest with craft beer. So it started to increase. They started to expand, and they've been expanding since the 70s, like I said, all the way through last year, and it continues. The beer that we're drinking today, this traditional lager, this accounts for over 80% of their sales. This is clearly their flagship beer, and it's pretty good. It's a basic lager. I can't say it's not going to win any awards, but I guess it could. It's just a pretty average lager. It's really smooth. Goes down really easy, has good flavor, but you're just drinking, it's not a light beer, but it has that style. It's really drinkable. It's a good beer. I enjoy it. I would buy a 6-pack of this, and I would not be disappointed. But you're buying a beer that's called traditional lager. This traditional lager that we're doing today that accounts for 80% of its sales, they didn't make this until I think the late 80s. They came out with the traditional lager, and they call it traditional lager because it is a throwback to their pre-prohibition beer. It's supposed to be that style, that recipe of beer. It's their pre-prohibition, so they call it their traditional. It's a pretty darn good beer. I like it. It's good. I'm gonna definitely look for Yuengling more. And from the sound of it, I should be able to find them. Apparently, they are one of the largest breweries in the nation. So I would like to try the Black and Tan. That would be cool. I'd like to know more about that. And if you guys would like to know more about that, I'm going to put the link to their website in the description of this video and podcast. It is at yuengling.com. You'll have to check the spelling on it. It has a little bit of a non-traditional spelling. So look at the title of this video or look in the description and you'll find the spelling for Yuengling. It is yuengling.com. So thank you to everybody. Thanks for tuning in for another episode number 23. And until next time, Happy drinking.